This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast where we explore the human side of technology, guiding you on this 3-hour, well, probably just 1-hour tour of the technological mind is myself, Kelly Dunlap, and of course, Josue Cardona.
Oh, you said 3 hours. I got excited. I thought we were going to go for 3 hours this time.
Well, we might. We might. This is a pretty fun topic that I found an article about and instantly sparked a ton of questions and curiosities. So I'm super excited to dive into it. And there's no better way to start than to just ask the question, Josue, have you ever had a dream come true? Not like a Disney princess, you know, yeah. Oh, my dreams came true, but an actual, you dream something and then it happened.
I don't think so. I've had experiences of deja vu that were so familiar that, I mean, there's different ways to explain that too, but I don't think so. No. Plus I don't really log my dreams. Mm-hmm. I know enough about the way dreams work that, that to prove this, I should have probably logged them. But no, I don't think they have. You?
No, because I don't ever remember my dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
But that, now that question answered, do you think that some people's dreams can predict the future? If not yours, someone else's.
Okay, so I have some crazy beliefs about all this stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and say yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm very, I would say I'm Jungian in my belief system. So there's a lot of stuff about the collective unconscious that I definitely think is possible.
So for those who might not be up on their Jungian theory, what, just real quick, what's the collective unconscious?
It's the idea that every single piece of knowledge, and I believe past, present, and future, is all kind of accessible by everyone at any time. We can only access it unconsciously. We can't consciously tap into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are people who say that they have ways to do that, to actually tap into it. But it's kind of like a body hack. There's a lot of interesting stuff out there regarding this.
Well, that's really in line with what we're talking about today. There was a Motherboard article that interviewed Dr. Stanley Krippner, who is a professor of psychology at Saybrook University. And he is a specifically researcher of parapsychology, precognitive dreaming, and shamanism. So those are his three major areas of study. And the article is titled "The Aspirational Science of Predictive Dreaming." So this entire article is about Dr. Krippner's research into whether or not people's dreams can actually predict the future, which sounds really, like wild and fantastical and very, very parapsychology, you know, something that you might find on the X-Files.
Yeah, pseudoscientific.
Yes, that's a good word for it.
Yeah.
So he ran a study, or rather, Dr. Krippner has run many, many studies, but what he's found through some of his more recent work is that people's dreams, he claims, were predictive of what would happen next. So the basic paradigm was that the person who was recruited spent the night in a lab, and the dreamer would go through just kind of an ordinary night of sleep, trying to dream about an experience he would have the following morning. So just trying to, to be told, dream about what's going to happen tomorrow. The dreamer was woken 4 to 5 times during the night so that he would be able to talk to the experimenter about what he was dreaming. And the following mornings, the experimenters randomly selected an experience from a number of options. So they had all these experiences lined up and they randomly selected one, and the dreamer was subjected to that experience. So if the one of the options was pet a puppy, then the subject has to go pet a puppy. And there's no way for participants to know in advance what experience they would encounter, whether they would pup puppies or kittens or bungee jump or whatever. And apparently what he found is that out of the eight-night experiment, and at the end of it, independent judges were called in to compare the participants' dreams to the experiences that they actually engaged in. And the judges apparently found matches between at least one dream and the experience they had the next day, and on most nights. So basically, if you are a participant, you went in, you committed to sleep in this lab for 8 nights, you were asked to try and dream about what you would do the next day, or what kind of things the researchers would have you do the next day. You were woken up 4 to 5 times during the night to talk about your dreams, and then you were randomly assigned an experience to complete the next day. And at the end of all this, independent judges were called in to see if any of the dreams that you recalled during that 4 to 5 wake-up period matched the experience that you had the next morning. And apparently they did, according to the study.
What was the quote most of the time?
Yes. The judges found a match between at least one dream and the succeeding experience on most nights of the experiment.
Yeah.
So not every night, but most nights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear the silence, and again, I'm trying to have a really open mind, so maybe here's maybe an example of what one of these recollections sounded like. So one of the participants had a bunch of dreams about birds. So either birds flying or birds in the air, birds everywhere. And then the next morning, his random task was to sit with earphones on and listen to bird calls.
Yeah, and nobody told him, or you know, the subject had no idea what they were going to do the next day.
Right.
So that is interesting.
So obviously we both have this kind of heavy set of skepticism, and that's a very common thing that I'm sure he faces all the time. But one of the more interesting aspects of it is when he's describing it, when asked to try to convey to people why is this happening or how could this possibly happen, he actually draws on the idea of quantum physics. Which I always think is a really fascinating jump that psychologists are taking more and more. And they're actually referring to it as quantum cognition.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I was cool late last year and had, last podcast and had cognification, apparently quognification is the shorthand for quantum cognition.
Quognification.
Right.
I like it.
And just to throw it out there, I am not a physicist. I never even took physics, so I don't presume to understand the actual physics part of it. But from what I do understand, quantum cognition is the theory of applying quantum mathematics to the decision-making process of cognition. So like how our brains come to making decisions, it can be modeled based on quantum physics and mathematical formulas. So if anybody of our listeners is a physicist and understands quantum mechanics and mathematics, let me know. I probably won't understand anything you say, but it would be interesting. So basically, in quantum physics, they've actually been able to have two things exist in two separate places at the same time, which you're not supposed to be able to do. So that's kind of challenging on the quantum end, but that's kind of what Dr. Krippner is talking about, is that, you know, time isn't linear, it's more of a circle. And so if you stretch something over that circle, at one point, your line is going to have two intersecting points. One maybe where you are now, and one in, say, the future. And so it's one thing existing in two spaces simultaneously, and that might explain these kind of precognitive dreams.
Also, I think, again, I am also not a quantum physicist, but I believe that the idea of quantum in- entanglement, I believe, and yes, there's other things, right, that have to do with one thing being able to influence another thing, or existing in two places at the same time.
Yes.
So another way to, or I guess another possible explanation, or maybe it's the same thing, is that by having the experience today, you can inform yourself yesterday of what you're feeling now, which would be the dream kind of happening at the same time as the thing afterwards. And since, and if time isn't actually, you know, if it is, you know, a flat circle, then you, you know, then the thing that both things are kind of happening at the same time, you're just looking at it from two different perspectives. That's kind of the idea.
Mm-hmm. And they, that similar idea is associated with deja vu as well. Again, there's a lot of theories behind deja vu. There's nothing
I was about to say.
There's a lot of theories. Nothing's actually been confirmed, but that's one of the theories behind deja vu, is that you actually are in two places at once. And the experience of deja vu is just the current mind experiencing that phenomenon, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, but again, I think I believe the most common theory for deja vu is just the feeling of familiarity. Right. So it's kind of, you have this sensation that you've been somewhere before, and it's not that you're actually having the experience again. You're just having like a physical sensation, mm-hmm, of sameness. Right. I don't know how else to explain it. You know, that it's not really happening the way you think it's happening. You're just having a feeling that's associated with repeating something.
Right. And so, again, disclaimer, we're not quantum physicists. So that's kind of the super smart explanation for it. Although the article did dive into something I think Josue and I are a little bit more familiar with, which would be Freudian theory, which of course influenced Jungian theory. But this idea that our dreams are a manifestation of our subconscious, and that our subconscious communicates to us, to our conscious mind, through dreams. Because when we're dreaming, we are not influenced by the quote-unquote waking world, that, you know, there's really nothing to hold us back from our brain's potential. And what's really interesting is that there have been recent brain studies using brain imaging that has shown that... Hold on. Right, sorry. So there's been some brain imaging studies that have done... God, I can't even talk. There's been some brain imaging studies that have looked at sleep patterns and found that during REM, the brain is actually oblivious to the kind of restraints the consciousness has and imposes, and that the brain is just kind of in free flow. Like, there's nothing holding us back. There's nothing holding us down. And that's what kind of manifests itself in dreams.
But what does that mean? Like, what are the restraints of consciousness?
Well, I think the easiest way that I kind of process it is comparing the way I think to, say, like, my 3-year-old nephew, because he thinks things that I would never think, and he experiences things in ways that I probably would never experience without his perspective. Because again, the mind of a child has a lot less restrictions on it. They're much more free thinking. They're much more exploratory. They have fewer rules that can, they're not bound to what we consider like normal, quote unquote. So that's probably not a direct analog, but that's kind of what I think about, is just the youthful, playful mind coming forth and forgetting all that it has learned. Like Yoda said, you must unlearn what you have learned. And I think that's what this is getting at with the subconscious and your REM sleep cycles.
Well, because, I mean, there is a truth that there is, your body is a giant antenna, right? We have sensors all over the place. And the amount of information that is available to us is... The explanation that we have so far, because, again, just a caveat, not only do you and I not know quantum mechanics or quantum physics, that field is probably further ahead than brain science and psychology and neuroscience, right? But still, there's tons of stuff about science, about the universe that we just don't know. So we try to explain it in different ways. And, you know, there's this kind of understanding that there's so much information to process and our brain can't possibly process all of it consciously. So unconsciously, there's all these other things that are being fed into the brain. So if you think about your eyes, there's tons of information, right, out there, but you don't you don't see all of it, and you don't even the things that you can see, you don't necessarily remember all of it or even process all of it.
Right.
The brain goes through this process of prioritization. And, you know, it's really interesting. Like when I was studying American Sign Language, I learned that deaf people have way better peripheral vision because, you know, they're not focusing on how things sound. The visual landscape is way more important for them. So, you know, we used to do these things where they would prove like how much they could see on to the sides more than a hearing person, because we're just we don't really need that information. We're not looking at it. So our brains have adjusted to kind of a more narrow focus. And so there's all sorts of things that the body could potentially pick up, but we don't really know how much of it is picking up. So when I think of restraints, that your brain is no longer held by the restraints of being conscious, that then at that moment you are kind of maybe tapping into things that you couldn't before, and our dreams are maybe just the closest thing that we can make sense to it with our conscious mind, mm-hmm. of all that crazy amount of information.
Absolutely. And I think maybe an example that might be more tangible is, think about yourself in a crowded room. Maybe you're at a party or at some kind of event. There's tons of information, all the lights and the sounds and the smells. Think about a football game. All your senses are being fed information. But if, you know, Josue and I are standing on the bleachers talking to one another, the only thing I'm attending to is Josue. So even though there is all the sensory information and I'm not like blocking it out, I'm not going, la, 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 I can't hear you, it is coming into my brain. And on some level, it is being, I think process is probably too strong a word, but it is being received, and even if it isn't processed, it's still on its way in. So imagine that when you're, I guess, not conscious, and you're free to just, instead of, you know, my focus on Josue, that intense attentional demand is gone. Because when you're unconscious, you're not attending to anything. You're not focusing on anything. So you really free up your mental space to really explore, I guess, and to really take stock of the things around you that you might not have noticed before. And I know whenever I talk about the subconscious, my husband kind of rolls his eyes. So, you know, we're not talking about, you know, deep rumblings in your brain and magic or parapsychology, even though we are currently talking about parapsychology.
Yes.
But it's the idea that there's a lot of processing that goes on beneath the surface. Like, I am not conscious of my eyes looking and focusing and attending. And if someone claps their hand and I turn towards the sound, that's something that was processed in my brain, but I didn't think about. I wasn't conscious of it. Yeah. I didn't make the decision to attend to it. It was something that I reacted to. So there are processes that go on beneath our understanding and beneath our awareness. And that's kind of what I think we're going at when we're talking about subconscious. So not so much the Freudian, I guess, yeah, the Freudian subconscious, as well as more of a cognitive-based subconscious.
Yeah, more the Freudian than the Jungian.
Right. And, I mean, one of the things that I always did enjoy when I was taking my psychoanalysis class was dream interpretation, which, of course, started with Freud and has had a very interesting history. And I don't know, have people, when they found out what you do, have they ever said, man, I had the weirdest dream, let me tell you, and you tell me if I'm crazy?
Yes,
okay.
Of course.
I feel like that's a universal therapist experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I definitely enjoy looking at dreams and kind of analyzing dreams, but not, you know, I don't put stock in them. And there's really two ways of looking at it. One is manifest versus latent content. That's right. We're doing a deep dive into psycho dreams here. So manifest content is, it is what it is. If you see a bull, you're dreaming about a bull. Whereas latent content is like, what does the bull represent type of thing? So it's not the fact that you are seeing a bull. It's, you know, what does that bull represent to you? And it's some kind of symbol or metaphor for something else that's going on with your life right now.
Yeah. Like in my family, there were, you know, if you dreamt about somebody in a wedding dress, that meant one thing, like somebody was going to die. Or if you dreamt that you were losing your teeth, that meant something else. I don't remember what it was. It was lots of crazy stuff like that. So when somebody had a dream, you know, like my grandmother would call all her sisters up, and everybody was, you know, worried about this dream that this one person had, because that means that something is going to happen.
Right.
But the thing didn't actually happen in the dream. It just, something represented another thing.
Right. And I think I actually have a pretty interesting example, which, so I, like I mentioned, I usually don't remember my dreams. However, in the article, it talked about an app called Dream On, which is supposed to help you remember, not just remember your dreams, but stimulate dreams. So it has this dreamscape sound, and it keeps track of where you are in your REM cycle. And then based on where you are in your REM cycle, it plays, I think right now I have Cityscape, and it's supposed to influence my subconscious. And I've only been able to use it for 2 nights, so I'm not entirely sure how much it's working. But there was one night where I had a I had a dream that, like, tiny little worms were coming out of my skin, as creepy and disturbing as that sounds. Like, thin little worms, and I was, like, pulling them out of my skin. And I was sitting... Yes! Very, very much ew! And, you know, I woke up, and I was like, oh my gosh, what was that about? And so, of course, psychologist Kelly has to sit there and think about it. And so, of course, if you were looking at it from, you know, a very concrete, a very manifest perspective, it would be, oh, well, you have worms, or, you know, that there's something wrong with you, or, you know, there's obviously you're trying to pull something out of your body, you know, like a worm. And then, so, of course, the more I thought about it, I was like, wait a minute, I'm pregnant. I'm the host of a parasite right now. And I have serious anxiety and worries about, you know, having birth. I wonder if that's kind of like my subconscious. I mean, although I think my conscious is very much aware of it, but thank you, subconscious. Of, you know, the idea that, like, I refer to it as my little parasite. So it's not surprising that it manifests as some kind of worm coming out of my skin. So, Josue, how much do I owe you for that? Little mini session there.
Wow, yeah. You know, before we get into what your interpretation of your dream means, the way that app works, right, is that the idea is that it plays that soundscape, right? At the moment, I guess what we described before as kind of being untethered and not restricted by consciousness. Mm-hmm. So it would be when you're most susceptible to outside information. So when the app recognizes that you're in that deep sleep, it's like, okay, now we can influence what's happening right now and kind of just feed that information. And since your eyes are closed but your ears are open, it can send a sound to you. I think it's strange that the cityscape one, again, assuming that it did anything at all, would result in that particular dream. It's also possible that particular dream was the one that affected you the most that night.
And that's what I remember, yeah.
And that's why you remember it. Yeah. But the app does work, is designed to do something very interesting. Did you do a lucid version or a regular version?
The regular version.
Okay.
Because I am not an accomplished dreamer.
Gotcha. Okay. I did try it one night. I did a space shuttle soundscape.
Ooh.
Because I want to go to space. Always have. It's on my list. And I did not. I'm not even sure it worked. I didn't hear anything at all. I don't remember hearing anything at all during the night. So mm-hmm. I don't know if it actually. I don't know if I set it up right or not. And then last night I was so tired I forgot to set it.
Oh.
I know. But I'm going to try it again.
Yeah, I figure I want to do it for like a week or two to get kind of a feel for it. Because, for example, I did it last night, and I remember not remembering. Like, I know that I didn't wake up to hear any of the noises. Like, when I woke up, it was because my alarm was going off. So apparently it did its thing, but I don't remember any dreams. I don't recall anything. But again, that's very, very normal for me. So pulling kind of all this together, this idea of precognitive dreams and subconscious influence, it kind of begs the question that if this is a real thing, or even if it's not, what if it was? would you want to be able to dream the future? Would you want to be the Jojen Reed and have green dreams and what you dream comes true? Because based on the dream I just had, I would say no, absolutely not. I don't want that to come true.
Okay, so, all right. I do want to mention lucid dreaming before we get into this conversation, because the idea of lucid dreaming is that you are aware of your dream and able to move around within it instead of just a passive viewer of, you know, like watching this movie. Really, you're an active participant in it. And so I want to get that out there, because if we do have some dreams that are that we're able to kind of jump in and move around in, but we have others that aren't, does that mean that would mean that sometimes our dreams are just random things, but other times we'd have access to future information. And so just the idea that there, I don't know if any of that is possible, but what I want to, is my only option to dream it? Can I just like view it some other way? Does it have to be a dream?
Like, I guess the way of looking at it is, I guess it's actually two questions. One, would you want the power to dream the future? And then two, would you want the understanding and the knowing that what you dream will become the future?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that's, I don't know. I guess not. I guess I don't want that. No.
So what you dream comes true, and then what you dream is the future. So it's like really splitting hairs, but it's the difference
between.
So like I wouldn't want either. Like I don't want to know the future. I really don't, especially not based on my dreams, because those have been interesting as of late. Which I'm sure any of the ladies out there listening who have had pregnancy dreams, not like dreams about pregnancy, but dreams while you are pregnant, they are by far the most bizarre, weird things that you could ever dream. So just throwing that out there for all the mamas who are nodding their heads going, yep, mm-hmm, yep.
I usually dream when I'm sick. So there was a long time whenever if I woke up in the morning and I had lots of dreams, I thought, oh, that probably means I'm getting sick. And sure enough, that was pretty much what would happen. I think there's some confirmation bias in there somewhere, but I know that happened a lot. But as of late, I've been dreaming. I have been able to, without any effort whatsoever, because there are ways to do this, not only with apps, but there are different ways, kind of different tricks to kind of get into a more lucid dreaming state. And I mean, I've had some like amazing dreams in the past where like I had wings and I could fly, and I visited like these steampunk Final Fantasy cities where like I loved it. Like, I wish I had more control over my dreams, but I've never actively tried to do anything like that. But recently I have been able to kind of just start taking more control over my dreams. And I think that that's really interesting. And recently, now, I saw this on a TV show. I'm not sure how accurate this is. So, I should have probably looked it up before mentioning it now. But the idea that people with a very, very high IQ are able to, while they're dreaming, kind of pause their dreams and even rewind them, like if they were a movie, and have way more control over people who, with normal IQs or lower IQs. And I think all of that, if that's true or whether it's true or not, I mean, kind of adds to the kind of the weirdness of dreams and kind of the amazing potential of dreams. A part of this that we're kind of not discussing, right, is that we're talking about predicting the future, but if that is true, if you could predict the future in your dreams, that kind of means that you should be able to view the past in your dreams also. And I think that I don't know how much that's possible. Would you like to be able to do that? Like have like kind of like total recall in a dream state?
No.
No? Okay.
I mean,
there are no events you'd like to kind of go back?
I guess the way I kind of view my dream states in my subconscious is that if it's in my subconscious, it probably is supposed to stay there, you know, subconscious. So, for example, I think about Inside Out, the Disney Pixar movie, and when the characters go into the subconscious, the main character's most deep-seated fears are in there, and then it gets woken up and then runs amok, and she wakes up in a nightmare. And so I guess in that sense, I'm not very adventurous. If something is, if my defense mechanisms have suppressed or obfuscated some aspect, there's probably a good reason for it. Either it's not important, or I really don't want to remember it, or my body thinks that I don't want to remember it. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with my subconscious making those executive decisions, because I feel like I've got enough on my plate. I've got enough conscious memories to keep me satisfied for now.
So this is interesting, because we talked about how kind of it's just too much information maybe for us to handle right now. And so your brain is constantly doing that thing that you just talked about, right? Like we've talked about memory in the past. That hard drive has limited storage capacity. We're constantly archiving things, right? And it gets to a point where it's harder and harder. Like you push it farther and farther back and it's harder to reach, and eventually it kind of falls off that cliff, right? And falls. What was it called, an Inside Out, when things were thrown out into kind of like that
dumping ground? To that big pit. I don't remember the name of the pit.
Yeah, but there, remember, like they would stay there until they would fade completely.
Right. Yeah, and it couldn't be recalled.
Yeah, yeah. Inside Out, fantastic analogies. Not yes. Scientifically accurate. There's a lot of shortcuts there, but great analogies. And so another thing, I believe, I'm not sure if my number is correct, but it's like 96% of the things around us in the universe, matter, is invisible to us because of the way our eyes are set up, right? We're only able to see about 4% of what's actually around us and everywhere, right? Like, so we talk about, you know, we can't see radio waves or Wi-Fi signals or anything like that. But if we could, that would be overwhelming, right? You couldn't right. see past them because there's so many. There's just so many, right? They're inundating the air. And so I feel that it's the same way with the conscious and the subconscious, right? There's just enough information for us to kind of get by and do what we need to do. And there's a lot of other information that we kind of need to filter and put it away. And the idea that our dreams are this, while we're sleeping, there's this time where our brain is kind of cleaning out that filter, you know, and yeah. moving things from one place to another. Like, we know enough about the brain to know that kind of thing, where, you know, and it has a lot to do with learning. Like, if you're trying to learn stuff, absolutely get a good night's rest, because your information is, it's like a defragmenting of your, do we still defrag computers?
I think if you have a PC, you do.
Ah, yeah. I haven't defragged a hard drive in a while, but that kind of thing. So you're moving information around, putting it, kind of optimizing it. There's also like your brain is kind of cleaning itself out, like getting ready for the next day. So to think that while that whole process is happening, where all of this information in your brain, which we know are really electrical signals and they're being kind of shifted around, if we're all of a sudden kind of aware of that process, it's not surprising to me that we see some incredibly crazy stuff. And some of it, I mean, if all of it is based on information that you gathered throughout the day, you know, discounting Jung's collective unconscious, then it's not surprising to kind of glean sort of insights from that information. I know that one of the big things that I projects I've been working on for the past few years regarding mental health care is the use of popular media to kind of gain insights. So I might see, you know, an episode of a TV show or watch a movie, and I don't get anything necessarily emotional or like any kind of insights about my life. today, but maybe if I see it in 2 years, I might, or maybe you see it with me today and I don't get anything, but you get this like profound insight because it triggered something in you. And now like that was able to help you move forward. And I think the same thing happens with dreams. There's enough information there that is real, is true, and is you or the people around you to be able to kind of revisit it and say, oh, hey, like I didn't, maybe this is happening. I believe that there's more of a random element to all of this than there is a precognitive state, or even a, you know, that there are incredible meanings to them, that if we just know how to interpret dreams correctly, we'll be able to, you know, gain these incredible things, that there's a, like there's a manual on how to interpret dreams. I don't buy that either. But I do believe in the possibility of, like I said, I do believe in the possibility of the collective unconscious. So I think it's possible to have precognitive dreaming.
We just can't prove it yet, or we don't have the tools required to run a empirical study that wouldn't make us raise our eyebrows, I guess.
Well, see, but that study, I mean, how many more times would we have to run it for it to start looking like it is something? I think that's one of those things. It doesn't matter how many times you do that study. People are not going to want to believe it, right? I think that the study supports my opinion of the possibility. I don't know the exact numbers. I don't know who is going to fund doing that over and over and over again to get, you know, enough data to be able to say, ha, look at this. I think someone will always try to poke holes in that. And someone will run a different study that's not exactly the same and say that they disproved everything that happened in that first one. That's the world of academia and research. So I don't know.
I have this really difficult time dealing with the confirmation bias. So there's a really famous example where President Abraham Lincoln dreamed of that he would be assassinated 2 weeks before he actually was. So apparently he specifically saw a casket guarded by soldiers in the White House and had been told the president had been assassinated. Like, that was the dream that he had. And apparently he noted it down and told his wife, and that's why it's known today. So on one hand, that's like, ooh, spooky, precognitive dreams. You know, he predicted it maybe at a subconscious level. But on the other hand, how many dreams did he have that didn't come true? And then on top of that, you know, he was the president during war when assassinations were common. And he'd actually been someone had tried to kill him the year before. So this idea that he has maybe some fears about being assassinated, I would say that probably has more influence on the dream than, say, you know, Abraham Lincoln having a precognitive experience of his own death.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could bring up any... You brought up one example of a dream. I could bring up one example of a dream that completely either supports or confirms, right, what we're trying to say here. But I think... So if it is possible, right, let's just say that it is possible, and we could use something like Dream On or some other app to kind of – because according to that research, the only kind of cue that they needed was to kind of be encouraged to dream about that thing, right, about the future, specifically a specific moment in time, and that was enough to – kind of get them there, right? So if we had something like Dream On, or there are other apps too that are kind of, their point is to help you achieve a lucid dreaming state. Again, that dream where you can, you know, you can fly, you can take control of what's happening and kind of control what the dream is. I don't know. Maybe we could find a way to kind of focus that time. What if the cue? What if the soundscape was a more targeted, more narrow focused cue of tomorrow morning 8 a.m. You know, or a specific date or something like that that could, you know, somehow shift your So there's this visual of, you know, your consciousness and your unconscious mind, and, you know, it's like an iceberg, right? And it's like this little tip is your conscious mind, and then there's all this other stuff beneath it. So there's a lot of information. So what if you could target all of that into one specific moment in time or one location? What would happen? I think this is a good, I don't know, I keep thinking about, you know, stupid things in movies, like, oh, we only use 10% of our brains. That is not true.
Yes, okay? Confirmed, not true.
That is not true at all. You're always using 100% of your brain. But it's all over the place. It's doing many different things. So what if, again, that idea that you're not, the constraints are out, and then you can actually focus more of your brain towards one thing, because there are things like quantum entanglement that have been shown in laboratories to take two cells and or two atoms or two things and move one, and then the other one moves at the same exact time with no delay, you know, showing that two things can kind of coexist in different places at the same time. I don't know. I think we might get to a point where we could do something like that. That, or at least I'd like to think that it's possible. If it were possible, I don't think I'd do it. But I would love to see that happen, because that would open up all sorts of new sci-fi movies that take the science and run with it.
So you're saying you wouldn't want to be a precog from Minority Report?
I would not.
Yeah, me either. I got you there. So, yeah, I guess kind of just wrapping it up that I think there's enough that we don't know about the human brain and about nature in general. You know, we talked about quantum entanglement and quantum physics and things, one item existing in two places at two separate times.
And other things that we don't know anything about.
Yeah, stuff that we just don't understand. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I don't. At the same time, I have a very skeptical scientific mind. And, you know, because you dream about birds, and then the next task you do the next day has something to do with birds, I'm not quite sure that's enough for me. But I'm also not 100% against it either. I'm not saying that this is something that's totally made up. I think it's something that we just don't understand. We don't have the language to describe it. We don't have the tools to measure it. And it's something that we're just going to have to kind of continue to work towards.
Yeah, I think this is my opinion, but I think that psychology, more than any other science, is a very kind of like applied philosophy, right? Kind of thing. It's there's a lot of theories, and then eventually someone proves that it's true, right? And I'm going to stop for the sirens,
because
that is.
Yeah, I'll just echo that there are very few things in psychology that we can say are definitively true versus, say, physics or chemistry or math.
Yeah, but still, I mean, there are lots of things that, we don't understand, and someone has an idea and they kind of run with that idea until we can finally either prove it or improve it. Same thing happens in other sciences, but I feel like in psychology more than any other, there's... It's just so hard messing with the brain, you know? And there's so many different variables to take into account. So, I mean, with that said, like the first time that you heard about the interpretation of dreams and the collective unconscious and things like that, like, the first time you heard about that in school, what did you think?
I think that's a tough question, because if you're in a psychology program, you've probably drunk the Kool-Aid at least a little bit. I mean, I'm definitely not a psychoanalytic person. I don't know really like the collective unconscious and that kind of thing. I'm not quite sure how much I put into that. Not saying that I don't put a lot of stock in it. That said, or at least in the way it's constructed. But the idea that there is human knowledge that is contained and passed down generationally through artifacts, I can get on board with that. But that we're all connected together and this, we just got to learn how to like tap into it. Not quite sure I'm on that boat yet.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, Freud and Jung died, and they couldn't prove it. But I think we'll be able to get closer to kind of understanding what's happening there. I mean, very recently, and I forgot which company did it, but they're able to store data in DNA.
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine instead of carrying around a flash drive with you, you just kind of put it into your cells or carry around a biological organic piece of material that is able to, you know, hold just so much information. So what if there really is a whole bunch of information encoded not only in our DNA, but in the matter that's all around us, and we just don't know how to read it. We just can't tap into it. And, you know, that might be one potential scientific explanation for what Jung and Freud were talking about, you know, 100 years ago. And I think that's cool that we're kind of seeing all these things kind of coming together from different directions, because they possibly may be referring to the same thing. At the very least, they're addressing similar phenomena, right? So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the future holds.
Absolutely. So, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Psych Tech. If you have any interesting dreams, or you've had dreams that have come true, you believe that precognitive dreaming is a thing, or if you don't, I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions. Again, this is something that is kind of on the edge of science. We're not quite sure where, but it's definitely something interesting to think about, especially the idea of if you could, would you? I think that's a topic that we bring up a lot on pretty much every episode, is if you had this ability, would you do it? And this one doesn't seem as far-fetched as some of the others, so let us know what you think. And, of course, you can find us on our homepage, which is psychtechpodcast.com. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe and leave us a nice comment and rate us. It does actually help quite a bit with the ratings on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher and TuneIn and Google Play. We're all over the place. And of course, if you want to get at us, the best way is through Twitter. So at PsychTechCast, and Josue and I are on Twitter as well. So we hope to talk to you soon. If you have any ideas for episodes, we're always interested in talking about what you're interested in hearing about. So thank you all for listening, and pleasant dreams.